As Unitarian Universalists, we find wisdom and inspiration in many places. Jewish and Christian scriptures and other sacred texts, the arts, science, nature, our own experiences. Our tradition keeps us open to revelation from many sources. Today's wisdom comes from our own faith tradition. The Reverend Marnie Harmony is the Minister Emerita of the First Unitarian Church of Orlando, Florida. I say that it touches us that our blood is seawater and our tears are salt, that the seed of our bodies is scarcely different from the same cells in a seaweed, and that the stuff of our bones is like the coral. I say the tide rolls in on us, whether we like it or not, and the sands of time keep running their intended course. I say we have to go down into the wave's trough to find ourselves and then ride her swell until we can see beyond ourselves into our neighbor's eye. I say that we shall never leave the harbor if we do not hoist the sail. I say that we have got to walk the waves as well as solid ground. I say that anyone who goes without consciousness of all this will remain chained to a rusty anchor. May the journey find us worthy. Amen.
Thank you, Craig. I want to tell you a story from my colleague, the Reverend Gail Geisenhainer. Gail is Minister Emerita with the First UU Congregation of Ann Arbor, Michigan. She says, "I was forthrightly evangelized into Unitarian Universalism. I was 38 years old, living in Maine, driving a snowplow for a living, and feeling very sorry for myself when a friend invited me to his church. He said it was different. I rudely refused. I cursed his church. All blanking churches are the same, I informed him. They say they're open, but they don't want queer folk. To heck with church. My friend persisted. He knew his church was different. He told me his church cared about people, embraced diverse families, worked to make a better world. He assured me I could come and not have to hide any aspects of myself. And so I went. And I dressed so carefully for my first Sunday visit. I spiked my short hair straight up into the air. I dug out my heaviest, oldest work boots, the ones with the chainsaw cut that exposed the steel toe. I got my torn blue jeans and my leather jacket. There would not be a shred of ambiguity this Sunday morning. They would embrace me in my full Amazon glory, or they could fry ice. I carefully arranged my outfit so it would highlight the rock-hard chip I carried on my shoulder. I bundled up every shred of pain and hurt and betrayal I had harbored from every other religious experience in my life, and I lumbered into that tiny meeting house on the coast of Maine. I expected the gray-haired ladies in the foyer to step back in fear. That would have been familiar. Instead, they stepped forward, offered me a bulletin and a newsletter, and invited me to stay for coffee. It was so odd. They never even flinched. They called me dear. Stay for coffee, dear. I stayed for coffee. I stayed for Unitarian Universalism. Over time, the good folks of that church loved up the scattered parts of me and guided me from shattered to whole, from outcast to beloved among many. And those folks listened to me. I and my life partner became their poster children for the brand new Welcoming Congregation program designed to help congregations live into their values for effective welcoming of LGBTQ people. And they went on to provide important local pastoral and legislative ministries to gay folks in Down East Maine. We journeyed together, and we helped each other grow. This is me. This is what I love about our faith tradition, this expression of the intersection of our first and seventh principles, right? The inherent worth and dignity of every person and the interdependent web of which we're all a part. We acknowledge the right of all people to be who they are, and we offer space for people to explore who they are, and we welcome all into the community. This way of being is deeply consistent with the theology of our faith tradition, which puts love at the center. Our universalist forebears believed that God loved us so much that they couldn't possibly send any of us to eternal damnation. And so there was no hell beyond, of course, that which humans create for ourselves in this life. And further, that theology called our forebears into an understanding that our faith tradition had to move and evolve as new understandings and experiences presented themselves, and that the circle had to continually widen to include ever more people and ever more ways of being and ever more ways of understanding ourselves and who we are. I've said before that one of the things that drew me to this congregation 5 years ago was seeing that you had already started on the path of living that theology of love, and you were way down it. You had learned to invite everyone in and do the work of finding ways to make them feel welcome, right? Because it's not just about opening the doors to everybody, sometimes even at the expense of your own comfort. You were willing to experience discomfort for the sake of this path of welcome. And I don't know too much about what it took to get there, but I imagine it might have had some things in common with the rest of Gail's story. She says, "Please don't think the transition was smooth or swift. These were not imaginary superheroes. They were human beings. And this was the mid-1980s. During the worship service on my second or third Sunday, a woman stood during Joys and Concerns to announce that all homosexuals had AIDS. All homosexuals were deviants who could not be trusted with children. Public health or civil society. As the member spoke, I slowly sat upright from my customary slouch. I tucked in my arms. I looked furtively around to see who might be glaring in my direction. And I tried to remember if I had parked my truck facing in or out in the parking lot. In its journey of covenant, this congregation had just stumbled onto an important crossroad. But as joys and sorrows continued, not one person made reference to the call to quarantine all homosexuals that this woman had uttered. The pulpit that morning was filled by a student from the local seminary, and at the end of the sharing, the seminarian made a brief comment to assure us that not all the sentiments voiced this morning represented the whole congregation. And that was that. Now I was at my own crossroad. I left quickly after the service. But what about next Sunday? Would I go back? Why on earth would I go back? That would be, well, you fill in the word. Dangerous, stupid, foolhardy, looking for trouble, probably hurtful. But back I went. I was in the throes of learning my first lessons of being in covenant with a congregation. When we covenant to journey together through all that life brings, it means that when things get ugly, we don't leave. Oh, how we may want to leave. But our covenants call us to abide and work things through. The next week, the regular minister was back. The service began as usual. I tensed up when joys and concerns came around. Someone announced something like a birthday I can't fully remember, but I do vividly remember that one by one, folks stood up and awkwardly announced that not everything said last week was right or true or representative of who we were as a Unitarian Universalist congregation. The crossroad had been engaged. The direction the congregation would take was being chosen. The congregation would not get stuck in conflict, mired in name-calling, or diverted from its gentle, steady trek toward building the beloved community. Our aspirations were unfolding one voice at a time. The congregation had passed a test. One among them had used language that depersonalized and endangered others. She tried to create a class of less than human persons toward whom violence would be acceptable. The congregation gently refused to follow. But an even more extraordinary and wonderful thing happened. The congregation also refused to depersonalize or dehumanize the original speaker. They did not start calling her names. That homophobe, that gay basher, none of that happened. When the speaker tried to turn homosexuals into objects to be manipulated, the congregation never referred to her in a way that was less than embracing and respectful of her full humanity. My friend was right. His church was different. He forgot to tell me at his church I could be in for a wild ride some Sundays, but he was still right. His church really cared about making things right for everyone. So Gail's story isn't just about how this congregation greeted her on her first visit, right? Although that's a big part of it. And it's not just about how they interacted with her as an individual as she became part of this community, although that is a big part of it too. Although both of those things are wonderful and needed and amazing, they are not quite enough. It's also about how they built within their system the trust that gave them the ability to engage their discomfort when something happened that wasn't consistent with their values. How they lived their covenant to journey together in love by remembering the humanity of both Gail and the person who had spoken their truth that was harmful to Gail and to others. Welcoming isn't just what happens the first time someone comes in the door. It's what we do week after week after week with everyone who is in this space at any given time as we live that ideal of being the expression of love in the world. It doesn't just feel good to be who you are, although that feels pretty darn good when you get to do it. It feels good to be a community in which we can be who we are. And that takes a kind of commitment to the community beyond ourselves, to work through the challenges of bumping up against each other as we build and nurture that way of being, because sometimes being part of a community that is so radically welcoming as we are can mean changing an idea or an understanding when we learn that an expression causes harm to someone whose identity has not been centered. So this term centering was one that was new for me not that long ago. It has to do with who things or systems were made for. Seatbelts are a fabulous example. If you're a woman or any person of a smaller build, have you ever noticed how hard it is to get a seatbelt to fit you right? Beyond comfort, statistics show that women wearing seatbelts are 17% more likely to die than men wearing seatbelts, 47% more likely to suffer a serious injury, and 71% more likely to receive a moderate injury in the same types of car crashes. The typical crash test dummy is designated as male, is 5'9" tall, and weighs 179 pounds. While dummies designated as female are an unrealistic 4'11" tall and weigh 108 pounds. Right? And the female dummies are rarely used still. This is centering. That is what centering is. And our society centers white and or male and or straight and or cisgender identities in our systems. So centering has a lot to do with being welcoming and inclusive, which is why I'm talking so much about the term. While unintentional harm can happen within all kinds of dynamics, a lot of people who are used to being centered, and as I say these words, I'm becoming aware that there is possibility to hear this in a shaming way, and that is not how I mean it. Many people who are used to being centered have not had to actively practice making space for people who've been marginalized, people who have not historically been centered. So those of us who are centered often, myself included, can use practice at developing awareness of what might be hurtful to those of us who've been marginalized, and even learn to anticipate that. And this is some of what we do here. Communities of trust can and do help that happen. The joys and sorrows speaker in Gail's story didn't mean to hurt anyone. As unfathomable as those views are to me, she was expressing her own views and maybe some of her fears in a space we create for that purpose. But her words were in opposition to the congregation's values, to the values of Unitarian Universalism, and the congregation's covenant called them to actively refute those words without damning the speaker. Gail doesn't talk about what follow-up happened with that woman in this story, but if I were her minister, I think I would invite her into conversation about how the views she expressed were inconsistent with our theology and our practice of love and inclusion. And that's the tricky part. Because sometimes those of us who are used to being centered become defensive when we are decentered. Sometimes what people hear in that conversation is that there's no place for them in a community where we're learning to center those who've been marginalized. Sometimes what people hear in that conversation is that their identity isn't welcome, rather than what I would hope to say, which is that their behavior isn't welcoming to others, which is what our values call us to be. And the particulars change all the time, right? As people learn more about the range of our sexual orientations and gender identities. Can you imagine that book having been written in the 80s, right? So this is ongoing work, which is why our Unitarian Universalist Association is offering a new program called 5 Practices of Welcome Renewal. We are what's called a welcoming congregation, and that designation means that we have engaged with a program that helps us learn how to be more inclusive, to learn what it is that folks of all sexual orientations and all gender identities are asking of their faith communities in order to feel welcome. The 5 practices are a way for congregations to renew that commitment into living into the welcoming congregation designation, because things change. So I want to invite us today to engage in that 5 practices program. It means officially renewing our designation. It means incorporating welcoming worship services into our calendar. It means recognizing and celebrating welcoming days of observance. It means participating in a welcoming congregation seminar or module. And it means supporting a welcoming project. Any of that sound like stuff we're not already doing? Right? We are on this ongoing path. I would like to see us engage in the program that gives us the little sticker. and helps us talk about ourselves in a little bit of a different way. I would be happy to talk about that more during coffee hour or later conversation. I will be around. And in the meantime, I hope to see you at the Pride Festival this afternoon. Blessed be.